Hey guys, the episode that you're actually about to hear with our beloved Terrence O'Hara, we recorded about 3 weeks ago, and
we found out that Terrence passed away yesterday,
December 5th.
We are so grateful that we were able to have this moment with Terrence and just tell him how much of an impact he had on all of us on the set of Grimm, but most importantly, as people, and we will miss him dearly.
Terrence directed 13 episodes of Grimm, and he was absolutely beloved among the cast and the crew and the writers. Everybody always looked forward to having him on set. We all referred to him as T, and just a little cute thing he used to always say on set after a great take, he would just say, "Pretty damn good." And then eventually someone on the crew made t-shirts that said, "Grimm, pretty damn good." And so that was all Terrence. And we're all thinking of his lovely wife and his kids and just what an incredible contribution he had to the show.
Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of an Englishman.
This is
The Grimmcast.
Hi, Bree.
Hi, Claire.
I'm so happy to see you.
You too. Is it turtleneck weather?
Oh, yes. We're in the 60s.
Whoa.
In the high 50s, low 60s.
Yeah. It's like a cotton turtleneck, so you're in transition weather time.
Right. Transitional wardrobe. Uh-huh. Wearing this with my long pea coat this morning.
You go for like a very like love story.
Ally McGraw. Yeah.
Ally McGraw. Yeah.
Ally McGraw, Diane Keaton. That's my vibe.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into today's Grimm episode and guest, we have more fan questions to answer.
Hey, my name is Debbie, and I absolutely love Grimm. I've watched it so many times. But what I was interested in was how you guys got together for this podcast, how you guys decided to do this, and just some more background on that.
This was actually an idea that was hatched during the pandemic, of course.
It was Claire's idea, hatched during the pandemic.
I just missed everybody so much. I miss everybody so much because I live in New York and Bree and most everybody else is in Los Angeles. Now Betsy and David are in Vancouver. So when we record, it is all remote via Zoom, but we get to peep in on each other.
We're also dealing with time difference. We actually haven't screwed that up yet in terms of what time we arrive. You know, we have a very patient production team that organizes all of our schedules, but I think we got it dialed in now. Now we're real pros. But mostly it's just a wonderful reason to see each other weekly and catch up on our lives and talk about one of the beautiful chapters of all of our lives. So it's pretty cool. But what you're listening to now, Todd Milliner, who is our executive producer, Hazy Mills and Sean Hayes, they came to us after we did our ragtag version during the pandemic and said, let's level up, make this legit. We're going to provide you with proper equipment so you're not speaking into a tin can in our closets like we were doing during the pandemic with our kids screaming in the background. Now we're real pros because we got a Hazy Mills behind us.
We have Hazy Mills behind us, yes.
Hey, this is Sarah, and I have a question. I am crazy about Rosalie's style, and I'm just wondering if the jewelry and the clothes that Bree Turner wears are things that she has in her own closet, or if those are things that a costumer has picked.
That is such a sweet question. I'm honored to answer it. I also love Rosalie's style. I tend to kind of give over to my environments, maybe why I love being an actor. And so when I moved to Portland, I really immersed myself in like everything it was and meant to live in Portland, including the fashion. I mean, the city of Portland has amazing independent designer community. Claire and I, and Bitsy in particular, we always shopped at these small businesses, you know, these local designers, and supported the community. And our costume designer, Alexander Welker, you know, we tend to, for the most part, I mean, obviously a lot of big brands as well, but we tend to always try to incorporate some local brands into our wardrobe on the show, which was just meaningful and really fun. But I was very intimately involved in the process with Rosalie. I mean, Alexandra goes and puts together a whole slew of options. And then we go and we usually have like a 2 to 3 hour wardrobe session each episode. where we go through try on things, but always just keeping the North Star of who Rosalie is. I mean, Rosalie needed comfortable footwear because she was standing on her feet all day in the spice shop. She could burst into a sprint if she needed to go save a friend or attack a Vessin causing trouble. I always had very sturdy footwear. And the jewelry, you know, all that kind of stuff is very personal to me. I have a lot of fun choosing all those things and giving meaning to them all. And I was able to take a few items from Rosalie. I took these little gold heart studs that I would wear in my ear. And I took a favorite of the characters in any like exterior night, rain, cold scene. This was the coat she had to wear because mostly it was the warmest and it looked the cutest. A kind of army green hoodie that had some fake fur inside. I took both those items and I actually just wore it yesterday in the rain and it says Rosalie in the tag. So I always have a smile on my face when I put it on.
Really big fan here. I've been watching you guys since I was like 10 and I've rewatched the show like a million times because I love it. But I was just curious, what did you guys have to do during the voguing parts? Like, did you guys have to do anything special for it besides like the shifting of the body? Was there anything else besides the effects going on?
We all handled it slightly differently. But I think for me, it was sort of like a shoulder shrug, head turn. That was kind of the physical part of it. Like you were scratching an itch almost that you didn't want to explode.
That's good.
And then technically, I had little white paper dots applied to my face with eyelash glue. Then we would do a take for visual effects. And they were dots so that they could track our movements and then morph it into whatever monster. And then there was a ball take that we would do. We would just scream balls.
Because we're all 10-year-old boys, we all laughed really hard and sad.
But yeah. They would hold, it looked like a Christmas ornament, actually, like a silver Christmas ornament. And that was held up for the camera. And actually, I don't even know why. It's, I guess, for three dimensions. Do you know why they did that?
Well, we're going to have our team on and we will ask this question, but I don't know. This is a good question we're going to ask and we will find this out and we will get back to you with this.
Yeah, it was a multi-layered process.
So to leave us a message, follow that link in the show notes.
We love hearing from you.
Today we're talking about Game Ogre and I have a really good story.
Okay, Brie, can you give us an episode synopsis here so that everybody knows exactly what we're talking about?
Okay, guys. An escapee returns to Portland seeking revenge against those who put him behind bars. His unusual strength and high tolerance for pain makes Nick take notice. As the case escalates, Nick and Juliet are put in danger, and Monroe is called into action to help put an end to the convict's deadly rampage.
Our guest today is Terrence O'Hara, who directed this episode and so many of the episodes of this show. And this episode was so tense and so scary, so suspenseful. And I mean, that is Terrence. And then Russell, I mean, freaking Russell.
We're watching this now in real time with you. Like, these are not episodes I watched.
Yes, I had not seen this yet.
Because I wasn't on the show yet. And so I hadn't been a fan of the show yet. So I'm watching these now. And I am, like, really into Grimm right now. And each episode just keeps getting better. Like, I'm, like, really into the show. And this episode is so good. And Terrence is, I mean, we're going to just go crazy when he gets on.
Just unrelenting, this episode.
Mm.
And Russell anchoring all of this backstory and putting these pieces together. And he's just so good.
He's so good. Everyone was so good. Everyone was bringing the, like, history and the pain, man.
Oh, my God. And then Bitsy dealing with the home invasion and the aftermath of that, where that it's just like...
I know, it was a beautiful scene.
All of the studio and network people were like, oh, we did get the right people. No, we really did get the right people. And they're all just knocking it out.
That is so true. Everyone knocked it out. And Terrence, I mean, one of just the most beautiful humans, but just one of the best directors I've ever worked with.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he is just the ultimate pro. But okay, I got to tell the story. So, like I said, I hadn't watched the series, right? And then suddenly I'm on Now I Know Everything and I'm seeing images of past guest stars. And Eric Edelstein, is that how you pronounce the name? Or Ogre?
Edelstein, yeah.
Edelstein. such a recognizable face. And his image was used a lot in like press for the show. But I never watched this episode or ever met that actor. But I just knew vaguely his face. So cut to, I mean, we're talking like 2016. And I'm down in LA with Jack and Reggie and Bitsy. And you were unfortunately not able to come to this Emmy weekend. We got invited to the Entertainment Weekly Emmy party.
Oh, yeah, because I was full-time in Portland then.
Yeah, you weren't able to come down. Anyways, we're at this party, and those parties were always, like, wicked fun and just were there. We were dancing and drinking and having fun. And so this was the same year that Stranger Things became very popular.
Priya, I know this stuff.
So I also, definitely at this point, I still live in a cave when it comes to a lot of television. I had not watched Stranger Things. I did not know anything about anything. It is now late. So Mama had some heat on at this point of the party. It was like midnight. And in walks a man. And I look and I'm like, oh my God, that's our ogre from Grimm. And I am like in my really social period of my drinking story of like when I have some alcohol. Like now I'm like really, really bubbly and super outgoing. And I come running up to him. I go, oh my God. How are you? Our ogre. It's Bree from Grimm. And he's looking at me. He's like, huh? And it's super loud. And I go, no, it's me. It's Bree from Grimm. How are you? You were on my show. And he's like looking at me so confused. And I'm so close to this guy's face. Bitsy comes over. She goes, what are you doing? That is David Harbour from Stranger Things. Like, why are you talking to him? Like, and you're very close to him. Is everything okay? And basically, I mean, these guys, they don't look alike, really. But there was a quality where I was convinced, did I put it together why Eric Edelston from Portland was at the Entertainment Weekly party in Hollywood, like at 12:30 at night?
I mean, he got another show.
He got another show.
Who knows?
But like instantly, like I was fanning out and he just kept saying, he's like, I don't know who you are and I have a show. And I'm like, but I'm on my show too, you know? And it was just,
oh my God.
I mean, he handled it very well, but I was such a spaz. And yeah, Bitsy and Reggie mocked me.
Did you realize your error immediately?
No, because like that was my level of inebriation time. I was like, just kept going. Like I just didn't get the hint that this was not our ogre from Grimm. This was Emmy nominated David Harbour, you know, from Stranger Things. Anyway, that's just a very funny story. When I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, that moment in my life.
What is funny to me is that you still hadn't seen the episode. You had just vaguely seen his face in a trailer.
Vaguely seen like stills of this actor, you know, who did such a great job.
Yeah.
Did you notice the subtle hands, like how slightly large his hands were?
I bought all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, except there was the one moment when he puts the alcohol on his bullet wound and like winces because it hurts so much. It's like, I don't know. He's this guy who doesn't feel pain and a bullet doesn't bother him.
Yeah. It was a bit of a reach.
I also like the opening scene too, where the alarm is going off and just the robbery is continuing and the assault takes place and murder with just like the security alarm going up. Which is my nightmare. Like when I've bought all of these security systems, I remember having Pete, remember our police consultant on the show?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, Pete, I just bought this new house in Portland. It's sort of like a fishbowl, you know, it has access on all sides. And, you know, like we're visible in the town. I would like people to not know exactly where I live. Can you just like show me where I should put cameras or like look for entry points? And he comes over and he's like, yeah, he's like, you could put a camera here, camera there. But really, like, if someone wants to get into your house, they're going to get into your house.
Mm. Okay.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
And I guess I'm just going to keep paying ADT. And yeah, my friend Bridget calls it very expensive theater. Like, if an ogre's coming over, the beeping's not going to deter an ogre.
Ain't going to do jack poo.
That ogre is going to crash through your wall.
Yeah. I like that. Also, he never used doors. He just went through walls.
No.
Ogres don't go through doors.
Yeah, let's get Terrence on so we can talk about the crashing. And it's just so good. I am so happy to get to see Terrence today.
Oh my gosh.
Let's bring him on. Terrence O'Hara, everybody.
Hello.
Terrence!
It's like I've come home when I see your face.
I'm so happy to see you.
So good to see your face.
Yeah.
Where are you? You're like in a cool attic space of like, I love the ceiling.
This is my office. where supposedly I can get away from it all, but the dogs are always scratching at the door. So
I know my dog, her nose is completely under the pocket door right now. Just like,
of course.
Yeah, the children are out. They're no longer scratching at the door. It's just the dog.
Yeah. You guys look great.
You look great.
Terrence, thank you so much for coming and doing this. Because Bree and I think the first episode that we got to do together wasn't even until the second season, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Neither of us had seen Game Ogre, this particular episode.
Yeah.
And I just was so struck by your touch on it. It's so suspenseful. It's so tense. It's so beautiful. It's like nobody has ever acted more convincingly. Like, it's just Terrence all over.
It was a fun episode. And that the big guy, the ogre, very interesting because he really was clumsy. I mean, he played that character. And he wasn't quite the size I wanted, so we put him in higher shoes. But even his stunt guy didn't look as clumsy as him. So in that big fight at the end with Russell, I used him for most of it. The stunt guy was like, no, dude, you're too smooth.
Yeah.
You're too stunty. Don't do that. But I love that guy. He just played it so well.
He did great. I mean, with such few lines, he was just so invested, so convincing. And I love the subtlety of the prosthetic on the hands.
Yeah.
This was a very sophisticated episode.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe, yeah.
Your just experience of over, like, I don't know how many episodes of television you've directed in your career.
Oh my God, 200 plus.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I hadn't realized it until this scene when Nick is coming home and it's completely silent. And he's walking through the house and has the phone call from Juliet about the ravioli.
Right.
And then the ogre just crashes.
Yeah.
It really, really got me. Because there's usually something going on in the back of something. And just moments like that were just so, so tense. You knew Lynn and Jim from before this. So
oh, yeah.
When they brought you on, had the show even aired yet?
I don't know, honestly.
You know what? Actually, I do know this answer, even though I wasn't around, because I've heard this story so many times. I think when it was released on air in like 2011, in October,
oh my
whatever
God.
It was,
that
I think this
ago.
Was the episode that was being filmed.
And yeah, what are the first things, like when you get brought on to something like this, like what is your sort of routine to go through when you're first starting to prep?
When I first started to prep, especially because it's a new show, I read every script up to mine. Just so I could get the feel, the rhythm. And, you know, Jim and David, they're such good writers. And they are open to change, which you guys know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if we did this, what about this? They don't think everything is precious. Sometimes they do. And most of the time I understood when they said, oh, no, we have to have this. And it was for a long-term plan. I may have watched a rough cut or a couple of cuts. And the DP on that was Court Bay.
Uh-huh.
And I really like Court. He works very well with people. Very imaginative. I mean, I'm jumping around, but I was able to do things with Court that a lot of DPs couldn't even light for to keep the camera moving.
But one I noticed in particular, Terrence, I even wrote down, was this circular shot around, I believe, our ogre.
Yeah.
You know, there were just a lot of very creative, very cinematic, sophisticated shots. I was wondering who the DP was on this one.
Yeah, that was Court. I don't know if he lasted one season or two, but very good DP. But actually, we got lucky. We had many good DPs.
Oh, yeah, we really did.
Got real lucky. But once I got the script, you know, I go through it page by page, character by character, and a second time and a third time, make notes, give my notes to the writers, and, you know, converse with Bert, what we could get away with, what we couldn't, because the visual effects are so important, as you guys know.
Yeah.
Transformation. Bye.
They control your day a little bit, too.
A little bit, yeah, but this is such a great crew. They really had it down.
Mm-hmm. You can feel that at this point that everyone felt like they were really settling in to the show.
Yeah.
And I think it was a perfect moment for you to step in and direct the series also. Grimm is, it can be so many different things. I mean, that's what's so fun. I mean, each episode authentically feels a little bit unique. And the show can carry this weight, you know, the real like legitimacy of the storytelling on this episode was really able to be carried because Yeah, I mean, the crew and the actors and everyone seemed really ready to level up.
Anything I asked for, those guys were able to get. Anything. I said, oh, I need a crane out here and jib arm and a boat on the river. Okay. You know, yeah. It's like, we can do that. Like throwing that hand into the river, that was like lucky. That was first time, first shot.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yep. I went, okay, we got it.
Who wouldn't fish that hand out?
It actually floated because it was rubber. So
it's not sitting at the bottom of the Willamette.
No, they got it out. That was the rules. They said, if you're going to throw stuff in, you've got to be able to get it out.
Leave no trace.
Yep.
Yeah. Had you worked in Portland before this?
No, I love Portland.
So these were all new people, new crew.
Some of the crew I had worked with before, I can't remember who, you know, on various jobs, but just very good. In fact, you know, the grip led by Bruce, fantastic, fantastic. As good, if not better, than people I had worked with in LA or New York.
Yeah, the best. We haven't talked to Bruce yet, but he's a planned guest on the show because it was just like the Lawson brothers who were running the grip department were also just kind of like mascots. Like they just really worked to keep the family together and the crew.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were just really tireless, for one.
Yeah.
Tireless and innovative. I mean, Bruce was always coming to me saying, you know, I've got this piece of equipment that we can do this, this, and this. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's do it. I mean, nothing seemed to be on them.
Oh.
Just so much fun. I mean, Grimm was one of my favorites.
You've been a part of how many series, like, in your career?
Oh, God, I have no idea.
Have you always been drawn to episodics, or?
When I got out of film school, I made 3 low-budget movies, which basically took 3 years for very little money.
As you do.
Yes. In fact, my first low-budget feature was less than $200,000. And I got a call for that one in the middle of the day. And it was a woman I had gone to AFI with. And she said, you know, hey, what are you up to? And you know, I said, well, you know, I'm doing this. She said, no, what are you doing right now? And I said, having a cup of coffee, you know, that kind of thing. And she said, well, I'm doing this movie. The director is flat on his back from drugs and possibly alcohol. And we're shooting at the Queen Mary, which was a bar just down the street from me. So she said, I need you to take over.
Oh, my God.
He's unconscious. And they were, I think, third day of filming.
Oh, my God.
I said, well, what kind of movie is it? Well, you know, it's one of those cheapy horror shows. And I went, okay, I'll be there. And I drove over, and they were so far behind. It had maybe a half a day of usable stuff. I sat the crew down that we were shooting in this club, so on the stage. And I just went through the cast and said, all right, tell me about your character. Tell me what you want, blah, blah, blah. The producer, my friend, she was pulling out her hair. She's like, oh, my God, we have to shoot. I said, well, shoot. We'll shoot. Relax. And we shot the entire movie in 11 days.
Wow.
And at that point, I had realized when you're filming a film, no matter what the budget, it still takes a year of your life, you know, in post. This. That for very little money, too. So, you know, a few movies later, I got a call from a producer in San Diego who was doing a show called Silk Stockings.
Oh, yeah.
And
I think Silas was on that show.
A very good possibility. And he said, you know, hey, Stu Siegel here. And listen, I saw a film you did, and it was pretty good. So, you interested in doing television? I said, sure. I mean, if he said he interested in anything, yeah. I would have said sure at that point. And I went down and shot 6-day shoot with one camera. And I loved it. I just loved it. I loved the pace.
Yeah.
I loved the fact that, you know, we have to tell this our story and we've got 6 days to shoot this. So it was a great lesson for me. You can do quality work and you can do it fast.
I was listening to Smartless and they had P.T. Anderson on. It was a really great episode. And he made a comment. It really stuck with me about how the new format of limited series, you know, that we live in right now with streamers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said it obviously in a much cooler way, but like kind of cheat a little bit because you get all this time to tell this story. And what you just said, like, the skill set of being able to tell a story in 1 hour in a digestible, interesting way is its own skill. And like, you know, with these limited series, which are super fun to watch. You get to really draw things out. But you kind of, as a director, I can sense that there is like this challenge of how can I tell this story in 48 minutes or whatever? I mean, even just the way you're describing your experience on your first movie set is the gold of working with you, Terrence, that you have this beautiful capability of, it's like both your hands are working at the same time where you're keeping the pace. You're playing the long game in terms of the pace of actually delivering the show in a certain amount of days. But I never felt ever rushed.
No, the opposite.
Or like there was any shortcut with any honesty when it came to the performance, because you're just beautiful at both. You're an actor's director and you know how to handle action and large set pieces and big complicated plot. You're just like the best, Terrence.
You really are. That's so sweet.
I remember, Terrence, when we were doing the episode that comes later where, you know, I'm in the police precinct and I realize that my baby's been stolen. And, you know, there was just like all of this stuff crashing and there was a lot of people and just really air traffic control going on as I'm like running out. And I remember you would just come up and you would like hold my hand and sit there and kind of tell me like a sentence or two. And it was like that would just instantly drop me into where I needed to be. Everything else kind of went away. And I remember like you were talking about just the efficiencies of just staying present, staying on set through all of the setups and through the changes so that everybody is still working. Like there's no lull. The train continues moving. But you had this intimacy with the actors so that we all felt so seen and safe. Like no matter what was going on and no matter what we were being asked to do, it just felt like a truly safe space to just be in our little like vacuum and cocoon. It is so rare and it's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I love what I do, because I care about the actors first. Because if you don't have the performance, if you don't have the trust and the ability to help people try to relax and just not press, you're really out of luck. And you can see it on shows where you go, oh, please don't push. Please, please. And then you go, oh, they did. Okay.
Well, that was the ease of this episode. You know, I mean, look, we were so lucky to have such high-level working actors on the show. I mean, people with a ton of experience and just so talented. But this episode in particular, I felt like that trust, even just like the backstory, you know, that didn't need to be overdrawn out. You know, it was like these quick little moments with Hank or Nick or Juliet where you saw a whole life in a very small moment without even language, you know. I mean, that's a collaborative moment, but it takes the director to trust in just slowing down and noticing the truth of a scene, like what you just said.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. When you were doing this episode, did you know how many more you would ultimately be doing? Or was it just, we're going to do this and then?
Because I had such a good time, I was hoping the show would get picked up. And at the moment, I thought I could just stay up here and shoot. Because it was so much fun. And they tell huge stories. I mean, big, big stories. As you guys know, and you go, oh my God. How are we going to do this? And then you figure out a way. And it was really a joy.
Where did you always stay when you came back up to Portland?
Oh, we moved around. They had an apartment in two, maybe three different places for directors, which was fine. It was all in, you know, the foodie district. So able to walk around.
How many weeks would you go up there when you take on the episode? Like, what's the total time commitment?
Basically three and a half weeks. You know, so you just pack for 3.5 weeks and hope there's a laundry nearby. Actually, all the apartments did have a laundry, so that made life easier.
So really only like a little over a week for pre-production and location scouting.
7 days for prep and 8, although we occasionally went into 9 when things weren't available. I mean, not like a show like Succession, which can shoot, you know, 3 weeks. And it's like, oh yeah, we have millions. We'll spend this money. This show is such a joy. Such a joy. Every actor committed fully.
Yeah.
Fully. In fact, this episode was the episode after that big fight that Russell had at the end. Afterwards, he said, you know what? We got to find me a good stunt guy.
Good on him.
Because he was muddy and aching, and it was pouring rain that night.
Russell has great boundaries, too.
He does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And listen, I don't blame him.
It's self-preservation. It's so smart.
You know, I said, you don't have to do this. You know, at that point, he was like, no, let me try this. And I think I had three cameras going for that whole fight and then moved in for close-ups.
That was a great scene. Will you talk about directing fight scenes specifically like that? And I mean, this has another layer too, because you have to get the monster or, you know, the pass for the dots and all the CGI that's going on after that.
Yeah.
Is there any different preparation when it comes to that, these kind of more intense fight scenes and trying to pick up different angles?
I try to plot, given our locations, which was a cement factory, actually, where we were shooting.
Yeah, the location that just is like the only location.
Yeah.
I'm like, how many times did bad shit happen at this location?
A lot of times.
People should stop going.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I had to stick Silas far enough away that it wasn't obvious. And, you know, that was like a whole different section with that. And part of it, I had to tie him to the fight going on. And the other part where I was shooting his close-ups, that was the easy part. That was like, ah, cake. Nobody's doing anything. He's trying to load a gun and he drops the bullets and blah, blah, blah.
How long does it take for a man to load a rifle?
Yeah, especially with three different bullets. He did great. He did great because that's really the first time he involved himself totally.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big moment where he kills his own kind.
Yeah.
I mean, I just loved the visuals of the VW coming up to the trailer. And I mean, the lighting was so beautiful. I thought the score was really beautiful in this episode. I mean, Rick Marvin always does a great job, but it was really a part of this episode for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Particularly in that scene when Monroe comes to the trailer. I feel like it's like this special music we only use for very special moments. And it's very grim, you know?
And his first time in there.
Yeah, big, huge story moment.
Yeah.
And was the trailer, when you're shooting there, is that practical? Like, that wasn't on a stage, was it? Or was it inside?
The interior we had on stage.
Okay.
Because the one we had on stage was probably 10 foot longer.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And we had walls we could pull away, although you tried not to because it took too much time.
It was fun to shoot in there because you really were in a trailer, it felt.
Yeah. And, you know, thank God Tim Spencer was so small and one of the best camera operators I've ever worked with. You know, sticking him in there and he'd find a little cubby. I got this. And you go, great.
Remember when Tim used to talk while?
Yeah.
This is our camera operator. So a lot of times, you know, it's just you and Timmy because, you know, if you're in a close up, it's just you and Timmy in there together.
It's you and Timmy in a closet.
If he was losing focus or the shot was failing, he'd be like, fuck, yep. You know,
I love that man so much.
You're in this dramatic moment.
He's so good. He's so invested.
Oh, yeah.
He gets so hot. And I did finally, you know, I was like, Tim, I love you, but you got to stop talking, man. Like, you know, it's really distracting.
And he'd come up with some great ideas, some which I use and others, you know, I said, great idea, except it screws up the end of the story. And he's like,
he was a renegade, man.
Well, that's okay. That's okay. I said, no, it's not okay. We're going to shoot it my way. But I love the guy.
And you know what? That's also something that's rare. Like, you don't always get to have that camaraderie. I mean, that comes from safety of doing a long-running show. But, you know, the combination of personalities, especially the camera team, everyone who's, like, in that inner space.
Yeah.
Was just a really magical mix where I felt like we could have a lot of fun.
How's that?
Be honest. Total professionalism, but there was just this sense of play and passion, you know, to like everyone's individual job. I mean, everyone just did such a good job.
Keywords, play and passion.
Yeah.
They loved what they were doing and enjoyed it. I mean, when we're standing in a mud pit on so many shows and you go, oh, okay, we'll only be here for about 6 hours and it's 5 degrees, it's fine.
You better love what you do when you're in that moment.
Exactly. I mean, I was always hoping that the show would come back in some form. I mean, I knew it wouldn't, but when you look at it, it had everything. It had honest drama, people that you genuinely liked. I mean, you really did. You cared about them. And that comes obviously out of the writing. Plus, you had the fantastical creature thing. I mean, it was a pretty brilliant idea. think about it, you go, wow, okay. Grimm's fairy tales. Let's see where we can go with this. It couldn't be matched. I mean, other people have actually tried, but it couldn't be matched.
Yeah.
Especially a stellar cast. I mean, you guys were such a pleasure to work. Such a pleasure. I mean, you always came in with thoughts and ideas. And, oh, what if? What if? Yet at the same time, we're open to, oh, yeah, I can stand on one foot and lean over this way so I'm in the shot. But you stayed in the moment all the time.
Yeah, just not wanting it to end, you know, like whatever I got to do. It's so true.
Yeah.
It was just so good to see you, Terrence. I know. Mostly it's like, when can we work together again?
I know you're working on a project with Reggie, right?
Yeah.
Are you working on All Rise with Reggie?
No.
No, they're doing a thing together. Reggie is producing it, right, too?
Reggie will be one of the producers, and hopefully this thing will take off. It revolves around the Filipino community.
Uh-huh.
And basically, think of it like Narcos around the Filipino community in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Which is pretty interesting. I mean, a very good group of people. And hopefully this thing will take off because I really like it. And it's fun to work with Reg.
So Claire and I just have to produce a series and then we can lure you back.
You guys wouldn't have to lure me at all. I would work with you guys in a millisecond.
We had the best time.
Yeah.
You were wonderful. And I love you dearly. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
I know. We miss you so much.
Such a joy to work with. Such a joy to just chat. I mean, this is fantastic.
Thank you so much, Terrence, for doing this.
Oh, you guys are welcome.
So easy to talk to you,
yeah.
Like always.
And we'll hopefully see you soon and give all of our love to the fam.
I shall.
I miss
and
them all.
And vice versa.
We will.
Love you.
Love you too, girls.
Bye.
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 He's just the best.
Just the best. And just such a loving human. I mean, a flippant talent and a half, but really a loving, loving human.
Again, when people come on to the show and just you feel like you are also adopting or getting enveloped into their family as well.
Uh-huh. We had such good people on our show that we know like their kids and their wives. I mean, it's not normal, guys. It's not normal.
I don't think so.
But I am grateful for it. Every day, you know?
And it was really interesting to hear the other perspective, especially from the director of the episode and like things that they're worried about or concerned about or the work going on.
Also, 7 days for pre-production, you know? I mean, like what he was saying about these streamers, like they have weeks and weeks and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's like, we made a pretty flipping good show.
Yeah, 7 days, which includes scouting all of the locations.
Yeah. Did you notice, I wanted to mention, was the fluctuating gray of Sasha's hairline?
No, I didn't know. This was like the beginning of the end.
I think it was the beginning of the end of the gray.
Yeah.
Where Sash clearly went to Doreen, was like,
Listen,
I have a reputation to uphold here in like sexy Manville, and that doesn't involve like this gray.
I think that I have said this before, but I cannot wait to have Sasha on because it's just going to be a roast. I kind of just want to prepare everyone.
It's going to be a roast.
Thanks, everyone, for listening once again and also for letting us honor our friend Terrence.
Some of our cast members reached out to share a few words about Terrence, and we will leave you with those to end this episode.
To be continued.
Hey, everyone. This is David Gentoli. I played Nick on the show. I texted some of the guys on the crew, whom I'm on a text thread with, letting them know of Terrence's really unfortunate passing. And the outpouring of sincere sadness and respect that they had for this man is noteworthy, but not surprising to me at all. Terrence was a guy who, after one day being on set, would know every crew member's name. That is rare. That is, unfortunately, not how it normally goes. And P.S., very hard to do when you're buried under a ton of work and have a lot of pressure on you as a director. He cared about everyone's job. Before he would move on from any scene, he would check in to see if every department was happy before he would move on. And because he gave respect, he got respect. There are a lot of ways to do the job of directing wrong, there are a few ways to do it right, and I don't know what he was doing, but it was right. There's a reason everybody's talking about him and so affected by his loss. So, Terrence, we love you. We will miss you. To your family, I send my whole heart and wish them healing in this time. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss your lightly profane mouth and your truly kind heart.
When I think about Terrence, the main thing I remember is his solidness, like physically and spiritually, sort of literally and figuratively. He's one of the most solid people I've ever known. And the way he would hug you, it was paternal, but it was also fraternal. You know, he embodied all of the classical qualities of honor. He was also funny. He was probably our best director in some very real ways. Calm, got his days done, made really good episodes. Pretty damn good. That's what I remember. He would ask for a direction or a tweak. And when you finished, pretty damn good. He's like the ultimate mensch, and I loved him. It's hard to believe he's gone.
Terrence was a great director. When I first met him, I was very green and fresh out of school and absolutely terrified. And he made me feel so safe and comfortable to ask questions and heard. And looking back, he was teaching me sort of the respect to expect from directors, which was the most important thing he could have given me. He was just the gold standard. And as great of a director as he was an even greater guy. I'm very grateful that our paths crossed, and I'm going to miss him.
Terrence O'Hara, my dear, 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 dear friend, who I affectionately call T. I'm sure a bunch of people call him T. But to say that I am gutted by this loss is a complete understatement. This man was not only one of my favorite directors on Grimm, who always managed to bring the best out of me by just giving me a look. We always had an unspoken communication about what to do. I adored him. As a matter of fact, he was set to direct a Filipino project that I'm producing. And boy, you should have seen his enthusiasm, his work ethic. One of the hardest working people I know. How he can be that hardworking and still be like a second dad and lovable and compassionate, a testament to him. I adore his family, Shanna, Maddie, John, and T, you will be missed, but I will hold you in my heart forever and ever. And I know you're up there directing away and being really damn good at it. I love you, my friend.
There are so many things I want to say about my friend Terrence. I suspect much has been said about him already by some of the others. It's hard to encapsulate everything that you feel. So I'll just say thank you, my friend. Thank you for having been such a wonderful friend, above all, an outstanding professional and director, a real leader for all of us in the cast. And I'll always keep you in my heart. Love you, my friend.